From the studios of WHQR Public Radio in Wilmington, this is Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. When it's time to prepare for the holiday season, one of the richest and most inspiring elements of that is holiday food. For home cooks, the feelings around cooking for loved ones and crowds at that can span the spectrum from excitement about creating new seasonal culinary traditions to dread over satisfying the always finicky or less than adventurous in-laws. But today, we're seeking advice from two local chefs who we hope will help us elevate our dishes, simplify our processes, and maybe even take some risks. But most importantly, we'll try to help you with your holiday head scratchers, such as how do I keep my Yule log from cracking when I roll it, and what is truly the best way to cook a turkey, and what is an easy, crowd-pleasing recipe I can use with a house full of guests. So now let's meet the experts who will be our navigators through the holiday food gauntlet. Simon Arnold operates Seasoned and Seared, a private dining club that occasionally offers pop-up dinners open to the public in local restaurants. He also teaches classes at the Seasoned Gourmet and helped to open the downtown Wilmington restaurant Canapé. Simon Arnold, welcome to Coastline.
Hello. Thanks for having me. It's cool to be here. I'm excited.
Keith Rhodes is well known for his relentlessly popular and highly acclaimed seafood restaurant Catch in Wilmington. He's also famous for his stint several years ago on the Bravo TV series Top Chef. He's a North Carolina James Beard semifinalist and was voted best chef in the Southeast in 2011. Keith Rhodes, welcome to the program.
Happy holidays.
And we encourage you to join the discussion. Do you have a question about a holiday meal that you're planning? Is there one particular dish that gives you trouble every year and you'd like a professional chef's advice? Give us a call at 910-343-1138 or send an email to coastline@whqr.org. You can also tweet us at @CoastlineHQR. Keith Rhodes, what is the go-to dish that we'll find on your table this Christmas Day?
Baked half a side of salmon. We usually have that right here in that freeway of the holidays from Thanksgiving right on into Christmas. But super easy, sprayed sheet pan, a nice piece of salmon, skin off. You want to have the skin side down. And you can season it any which way but loose. Whatever way you like it. I like a simple herbs de Provence sprinkled over the top, some lavender, pepper, rosemary, thyme, some kosher salt. There's somebody from Riceville Beach right now making local sea salt. And so, hey, why not try to source that? They've got it down at the Seasoned Gourmet. You can sprinkle it all on the top. Bake it 375 for about 30 minutes.
375 for 30 minutes. And how big a piece of fish are we talking
about? Oh, yeah, I would say that side is probably going to be about a 3-pound side. So it should feed, I don't know, maybe about 8 to 10 people. And it's very good even at room temp. I mean, you bake it off, you can put it on a nice platter, garnish it with some fresh herbs, and sit it out, and people will love it. Anything left over, a little bit of mayo, mix it all together, you got salmon salad. So,
and this is something that everyone will eat.
Everyone will eat. I mean, and it's something
the kids.
For sure, because you don't get that all the time. I mean, if we get seafood, it's maybe something fried or maybe something just small, but it's kind of grand to have that big side of, you know, it's kind of like the prime rib. You know, you do a whole side and it's like, oh, you know, I'm hungry and I'm not hungry. You know what I mean? Yeah, but for sure, salmon.
Simon Arnold, what's the go-to dish for you on the holiday table this year?
This year, chestnuts. I just bought 25 pounds of chestnuts. It took me about 3 days to get through about 15 pounds of cracking them. So I've got several pounds of chestnuts to go through. Chestnuts are going to be all over the place. Chestnut stuffing, soups, everything. Yeah.
So do you ever just roast them and serve them out of their shells as roasted things, or is that – I saw somebody getting snarky about that online, like roasted chestnuts. What's up with that?
Well, they're a pain. It's labor intensive, which is – I don't know. I mean, I in some ways kind of like that torture, I guess. I don't know. There's like a Zen work thing.
It's very seasonal.
Yeah, that's too. A lot of people aren't familiar with them too, so – You know, you hear chestnuts roasting over an open fire, and so you're like, exactly. Oh, yeah, the holidays. But exactly. I don't know what, you know, most people are like, I've never even had them before. And they're delicious. They are delicious.
Sweet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very, very good.
So just roasted, you mean?
Well, yeah, any way. I mean, the way you have to do it, you score it, throw it in the oven or in boiling water.
So when you're saying that you score it, you're talking about it's
knife.
Already out of the
shell.
In the shell. Okay.
You have to basically use a knife and cut through the shell, roast it or boil it, and the shell will loosen up. So you peel the shell out, and then you have a skin. And while it's hot, you can remove the skin fairly easily. And from there, you cook it. Because it's really labor intensive, but quite worth the effort.
And do you season it with anything, or are they just?
I mean, you can do anything. I mean, you can at that point you can slice them raw and put them on a salad. You can cook them in stock and make a soup. You can chop them up and put them in, you know, a stuffing. Candy them. It's quite good. Or just eat them like right out of the shell. My dad was the first guy to ever show me what's up with chestnuts when I was a kid. My dad, being European, I guess, and a farmer from France, always was in touch with a side of food that most kids didn't really get to see and experience. And so he was always kind of showing me interesting things. And chestnuts was one of those things. We'd go, you know, out in the middle of the woods and grab a bunch off the ground and just sit around the fire all day and eat chestnuts.
Keith Rhodes, what is the wildest thing that you've ever made for a holiday family gathering that you thought, well, that was risky, but maybe I won't do that again?
Oh, well, I think when I was fancying myself an amateur kind of barbecue master, and we did a pig one year, and you know, every chef wants it, you know, it's perfect even when it tastes like rubber, you know, but my wife came in and was like, hey, this is not good. The pig's pretty tough, you know, and you know, she's my biggest critic, you know, and, you know, back then, and we were early on, the kids were young. I remember shortly after there was a couple of boxes of Bojangles sitting on the table, you know what I mean? Because the pig got retired. Yeah, that was pretty crazy, but we try to keep it really, really seasonal now. And so we really have a lot of go-to recipes that we kind of repeat, you know, year after year. We have different friends that come in and that kind of thing. One of the best things that we cook, and I mean, it's pretty spot on because, again, when you're thinking about something that everyone will eat, or at least everyone will try, we do a really nice root vegetable gratin. Mm. And so, you know, right around here, locally right now, you've got sweet potatoes, rutabagas, turnips, and maybe some other sort of root beets, maybe, or something like that. We peel them all, slice them into about a half-inch square, toss them some olive oil, salt, and pepper, put them on a sheet pan, and bake them off in the oven. Now, they usually take about 45 minutes to an hour at 375 degrees. And you want to cook these particular vegetables. Usually when we cook them a little bit al dente. That's kind of how I like my vegetables. A little soft on the outside, a little firmer as we get into it. But these, you want to cook them till they're fork tender, where you mash them. Take them out. We take those and mix them with a little bit of heavy cream, a little bit of cheese, and then we put them out in a roasting pan, cover them with breadcrumbs, and then bake them back off 400 degrees. It's like 15 minutes. And I will tell you something. It's oh my God. It's so good. So comforting. It's just was one of those kind of things where you just didn't expect for it to taste that way. All these vegetables, but they all really gel really good together. And it's just hearty. It's seasonal. It's comforting. And I think that, that's one of the things that's super easy. And I encourage everyone to try that recipe. Some of these things we talk about, if you want them, you know, just email us. You know, you can reach me on Twitter or on Instagram at onebadchef. That's One Bad Chef. Send me something and I'll send you back the recipe.
And at the end of the show, I think when we post this edition online, we'll actually include links to both of you guys' websites. All so right. Folks cool. Can get in touch with you if they've heard something. Simon, you've talked about the importance of organization in a kitchen, mm-hmm. particularly when cooking a big dinner for an extended family. What are some simple ideas that home cooks can use to organize their kitchens?
Oh, well, write a list. You want to have, you want basically everything written down on a list. I mean, in a restaurant, you live and die by your prep list. Preparation is basically the most important thing about getting your meal done on time and everything cooked right. And it'll keep you from, you know, the home cook or any cook from wanting to go berserk with stress, like, oh, is my roast gonna be done on time? You know, you don't want to have to do that. So, having a list, getting your priorities in order. So, let's say that you've got a turkey, and the way that I would do the turkey, I would remove the legs, put them in a Ziploc bag, butter, herbs, garlic, get a large stock pot on, throw it in the water. I would want my water, you know, basically have a water bath, and so keep my water around 150 degrees, and then boom, you know, you just let it go till the internal temperature of the turkey is 145.
So about how long would that be? Seems like it would take a long time for that. 150 degrees?
It's well within the temperature danger zone limits. So, and it's that is much easier in my opinion.
What type of technique do you call that? It sounds
that
like
is called
a sous
vide. Yeah,
very good.
It's basically the home. I mean, you can. That's the easy home cook method. You don't need a lot of interesting things like that, you know.
That's music. We're going to a break in just a moment. You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM. Welcome to our holiday trough. We have two local professional chefs in studio today here to help with your holiday food challenges. When we come back, we're going to talk with Stephen, who has a question for our chefs. Give us a call, 910-343-1138. You can email us at coastline@whqr.org. This is Coastline. Welcome back to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. We're talking about food today with two professional chefs. Keith Rhodes, owner and chef at the popular Wilmington seafood restaurant Catch, is with us today, as well as Simon Arnold of Seasoned and Seared, a local private dining club. Welcome back, both of you.
Nice to be here.
You're invited to join the discussion. If you have a question or a recipe idea, give us a call, 910-343-1138. You can also send an email to coastline@whqr.org or tweet us at @CoastlineHQR. And Simon, I just want to wrap up what we were talking about. Keith, you said that the technique Simon was talking about, cooking a turkey basically in a pot of water in a Ziploc bag, is called...
Well, it was called sous vide. And I think that when he was just talking about the turkey, you know, taking those legs off so they would be tender and moist, as opposed to roasting the whole turkey together.
Yeah,
and we get those,
it doesn't make any sense.
You know, we get those areas where this is a little more dried out and that kind of thing.
Because they're two completely different cuts. They're two different meats altogether.
Right.
They've got different, you got to treat them differently.
And I think that that's a great approach to that turkey. So prioritizing, making sure that you get that turkey in immediately. Then what's the next thing that's going to take a long time that you could be doing something else?
And do everything that you can in advance, clean as you go.
One of the things I found that was really cool about these meals, especially when we're the chefs and I feel like I'm obligated to cook this meal for everyone, something in the last few years that I've done is just break out in stations. You know, like Simon says, okay, I've got to get the turkey on, or I've got to get the pig on the grill, you know. So now I've got more guests coming in, or I got my kids. Hey, I want you to go over here and roll these crab spring rolls. Hey, I'd like for you to make the mixed beverage, you know.
And so you get everybody involved.
And it's a lighter load, and everybody's contributing to it. Again, it's the holidays. Everybody, and it's a fun thing. It's not labor intensive. Think about your menu design for sure.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, a lot of us are getting, not everyone's in a grand home where we have three refrigerators, three ovens, and those kind of things. So what can last really good at room temperature where we can lay this buffet out? You know, not everybody has chafers and hot warmers and all of that, where we can have some things at room temperature that can go for an hour or two where people can constantly graze and have a good time.
Yeah, that's really the big thing. It's just having fun. I mean, what's the point of having
a
holiday?
Have a couple of snacks, some nuts and fruit and those kind of things to take the edge off.
So get a bourbon.
And let's go ahead and take our first phone call. Stephen, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Yeah, hey, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Quick question. I don't know who to direct this to, so I figure whoever might have this information. Part of my holiday cooking, specifically Christmas Eve, involves making ravioli, and I make it by hand. Sometimes the dough does not stand up well in boiling water. Sometimes it does, and I can't figure out what I do differently that makes this happen.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure. This is Simon Arnold of Seasoned and Seared.
Hi.
Yes,
what's your pasta dough
I use semolina wheat.
Okay, what's your ratio eggs or egg yolk to flour?
One egg to a cup, I believe.
Try this next time you make your dough. I've done this since forever, and I've never, ever, ever had a problem. I do equal weight by weight. Almost always I measure by weight.
Okay.
But equal egg yolk to flour by weight. A tablespoon or so, or a teaspoon, or just a little bit of oil. Oil will help with elasticity in your dough, and salt. You need to put salt in there.
Right.
Go ahead and go through the dough-making process like you normally would. Let it rest. You must let your dough rest for at least an hour. And then from there, you can roll it out. I think you'll probably have better results. I have pretty great results, you know, every time.
I'm sorry. It's yolk to flour ratio?
It's 1:1. 1:1 ratio by weight. Yeah. So I use exactly
okay.
the same amount of yolk that I would use
as flour.
Yes.
Stephen,
yeah.
One pound of flour, 1 pound of yolk.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I would do.
Stephen, is this kind of an improv for you every year? Do you just do it by feel, or do you have a recipe that you follow?
Well, I do have my own recipe that I've used. But I've varied the amounts of flour that I've used based on how many people are coming.
Okay.
So my ratio must have been off in some cases.
And it's okay if you have extra dough left. You can stick that in your freezer and pull
right.
it out and let it thaw in your refrigerator and re-roll it later on if you have a party. Also, when you say it doesn't hold up, does that mean that it's just disintegrating in the water, or is the filling coming out?
Well, both.
It
opens up and the filling comes out.
Okay. You might not be sealing your ravioli well enough.
I have a press that I put it on, and I roll the rolling pin over it. So I feel that it does, but maybe not.
I've used those presses before and have had varied results like that.
Okay.
Your press
right.
might not. I don't know. Keith's kind of shaky.
Keith, do you do it by hand when you seal them?
Yeah, and I think that probably using a little bit of egg wash or something like that to seal it. I think that Simon touched on it. One of the things immediately when you said your recipe was the lack of oil. You've got to have a little bit of oil, and that makes it a little more flexible, so it's not as stiff and like he says, just disintegrates in the water.
Yeah.
So a tablespoon of oil to a cup of flour?
Well, that might be a little too much oil for a batch that small.
Yeah, I would think, a teaspoon or something like that. But use a really great oil. And again, just remember egg and flour by weight.
Yeah,
okay.
always
All
by
right.
weight. Yeah, more exact that way.
All right, Stephen. Hope
good.
That
Thank
was helpful.
Happy
was
holidays.
Happy holidays to you guys. Thanks.
You too. Thanks for calling. And we have Alexis from Wilmington. Welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
I have a question for Keith. I'm going to a book club this evening, as a matter of fact. I've got a 4-week-out shoulder replacement, and most of the people are vegan, and I'm not. So what can I take that I can make simply?
That's a great question. Vegan, not vegetarian, but
what?
Vegan.
Well, all three, actually. There are some that still, you know, eat meat, but...
You have a food processor?
No.
Well, I tell you what, something that would just, I just think if you didn't want to make it, or you want to make something, or you just want to pick up something. And I just tell you something that's just really good right now. Hummus.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Oh, we always have hummus.
You say you always have hummus.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's see. And they're all...
Can I tell you an idea I have, but I don't know how to... You know how you use that phyllo dough?
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, it's too late for that. I wouldn't be comfortable doing it,
but...
Because I've never used it before.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to take shrimp and kale... Not shrimp, spinach and kale Greek yogurt dip from one of the stores.
Okay, so grab that. If you go to Harris Teeter in the frozen food section back by the desserts, mm-hmm. they have these little phyllo dough, like tartlet shells.
Right.
They're already like pre-cooked off. So yeah, you got to do is just fill them like that, put them on a pan, and heat them up for a few minutes. That might work for you.
I can vouch for those. Super simple.
You know, and they still have that really flaky like crust. You get a whole bunch of them in a box. So, you know, and they're only for a few dollars. So that might suffice right there.
Hey, Alexis,
you think Greek yogurt would hold up?
I definitely do.
Is Greek yogurt vegan?
It would not be because it's dairy, isn't it?
Yeah. Can I throw an idea?
I'll get two of them. I'll get the meat eaters and the vegetarian.
Well,
I mean, come on.
Simon's got something for you.
Okay, so this is a really simple, I mean, come on. This is a really simple idea. It's pretty inexpensive. And it's delicious. Like, I can't express to you how good it is. You'll just have to try it. So get a head of white cabbage.
Okay.
Turn on your oven to high broil.
What do you mean when you say light cabbage?
White.
As in not green or red?
Yeah. The most basic. Okay. Yeah, not like Napa cabbage, but like the really condensed cabbage head. Okay, so get that. Yeah. Cut it into wedges.
Mm-hmm.
Throw it in your broiler, salt it, throw it into your broiler, and when it mm-hmm. comes out, drizzle white truffle oil on it. And if you have any like chili threads or chili flakes, put that on there as well. The truffle oil and that roasted cabbage flavor, it's so simple and it's so delicious that I mean, the first time I tried it, I could not believe how good it was.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's an idea.
Is that helpful, Alexis?
That was extremely helpful. Thank you so much.
Good. Thanks
Happy
so much
holidays.
For calling in. All right. You're listening to Coastline. We're talking about holiday food, the inspiration, the challenges, hints from professional chefs. Joining us in studio today, chefs Keith Rhodes and Simon Arnold. If you have a question for our chefs, give us a call at 910-343-1138. Send an email to coastline@whqr.org or tweet us at @CoastlineHQR. Now, I have to ask about the old-fashioned holiday staples here, like the green bean casserole. Is that something that you guys would ever do? You know, the green beans with the gloppy, condensed mushroom, cream of mushroom soup, and the French's onions that, you know, the crumbly things that have a shelf life of infinity in the grocery store. Would you ever do that? Would someone ever find that on your table?
Never.
No.
Okay.
No. Now, the components.
Absolutely.
Probably.
Components. Yeah.
You know, some sauteed shallots, some haricots, maybe some sliced shiitake mushrooms or something like that. But it's just taking that same thing, but just.
Using real food.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And for us, and I think that my family's palates can really dig the freshness, the crispness of the beans and things like that to offset all of the heavy processed canned Campbell's mushroom soup, these breaded onion thingies. Yeah, you know what I mean? And I think there's an overall satisfaction that we get from scratch-made food today when we're living in such a convenient type of time where time is of the essence.
And do you think that your family's palate changed, Keith Rhodes, as you grew as a chef? Or has your whole family just been born with the food gene?
No. The food gene wasn't inherent. I think that our palate changed just like the American palate has changed. Mm. For so many years, we were only exposed to limited amounts of cuisine, whether it was just Southern or New England or California.
Then French. That was like the thing for so long.
Yeah. And now look at what we call new American cuisine. Mm-hmm. And so we have an influx of food and that inspires all of us. And so, our food has really changed a lot. But I think that one thing that we really gravitated towards as I got into my 20s was a fresher, more cleaner type of food as opposed to a lot of the food that we kind of grew up eating, which was like heavy Southern, low country, gravies and heavy sauces and things like that. And I know early in my career, we had already begun to move away from demi-glaces and heavy things like that. You would never find that on my menus now, and you probably wouldn't have in the last 15 years because our style and our approach is a lot different than that.
I would like to just... This is totally, you know, my opinionated. I love a good demi-glaze. Like, I love a Making a stock is probably one of my favorite things to do.
What's a filet without good demi-glaze?
Right?
Okay, wait a minute. Demi-glaze, for those of us who are not chefs, you're talking about a sweet kind of glaze. No? Okay,
so
tell me what it
is. Demi-glaze is basically, so you take your stock and then you reduce. You reduce. And when you reduce, you're evaporating water. And as you evaporate water, you condense your flavors and you also get a thicker product at the end.
And you're wondering, what are we reducing? Roasted bones.
Pretty much, yeah. So and vegetable
matter and things like that. Yeah, so it could be chicken. It could be veal. It could be beef. Any of those type of things.
Fish.
Yeah, any of those type of bones, you know. Most of the time, a demi-glace is of a roasted color. So it takes on kind of color. Chicken would be a little bit more darker, golden tan, caramel kind of look to it. And our veal and beefs are definitely a lot
like
brown.
Raisin. Yeah, they look like a raisin.
But color. I mean, on a good steak, I mean, that was the demi-glaces was the original A1.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah, beef is no good without it.
Now, I have a coworker who says that she's afraid to cook a prime rib because, as we know, they're so expensive, so there's no wiggle room.
Okay.
If you screw that up, that's
a
big deal.
Yeah, it's a huge loss, yeah.
Right. So what would you say to people who would love to put a giant prime rib on the holiday?
Sous vide that thing. Sous vide it. I cannot express how, it's an old technique. I mean, under vacuum is that's what sous vide means in French. And it's been around for a really long time. Only lately have, with the emergence of immersion circulators and vacuum sealer chambers and all this stuff, have people molecular gastronomy, which I can't stand that, but
we heard that.
Yeah. You get temperature control, so you can set your water bath in your, you know, lobster pot or whatever on your stove to whatever temperature you want your internal temperature of your meat or product to come to, put it in the bag with herbs, butter, or whatever kind of fat, suck the air out of it, seal it, throw it in the bath, and then and just let it sit. And it's great because, one, you're not going to overcook it. Two, all that flavor is staying inside of that bag, so it's going to absorb a lot of butter flavors, a lot of the herbs or whatever you put in there. So when you pull it out, you've got it perfectly cooked. And there's always generally a finishing step, which in this case would be searing it to get that good Maillard reaction, that super crispy caramelization or whatever.
So would you sear it then in a pan?
Yeah, I'd sear it in a pan afterward and then let it rest and slice it. And you've got perfect roast.
Mm-hmm. Perfect roast. And Keith, is there an alternative?
I'm just going to go a traditional kind of way. I worked in a restaurant where we did prime rib like every Sundays, and it was very, 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 I tell
like.
You, I would rather have my ribeye sliced raw, pan seared, and eaten as a steak as opposed to a slow roasted prime rib. But anyway, you know, a hunter doesn't go to hunt a deer and figure he's going to jump the deer and choke him. You know, he has his necessary equipment to go out and to pursue that game. And so that's the same way we should be when we are thinking about our attack on the food and the recipe. So an internal meat thermometer would be essential in this particular case for the home cook or the novice. So we get our prime rib, which is about as long as a forearm and probably as wide as a football. Preferably when you get that prime rib, have the bone in. That bone tends to impart more
flavor.
Of that beefy flavor. And normally there's a fat cap on the top. So we're going to just kind of slice a half inch of that fat cap. We're going to pull it all the way over the whole length of the beef. Season it really hard with chopped garlic, salt, and pepper. Put that cap back on the top of it.
Really?
Like
so you season
like
it and then treat
the
it like a sandwich.
Because that fat is going to baste it, kind of that kind of deal. Put that thermometer in the middle, in the center of that. Put it on a roasting pan in the oven. We're thinking at about 2 hours at 350 degrees. We're looking for an internal temperature of about 140. We still want it pretty rare. So when we pull it out, it's going to still continue to cook some. And I would let it go just like that. And I think that, you know, you can see the temperature as it rises. You'll get that. When you do it slow at that particular temperature, you'll get a nice browning effect on the outside. And I would encourage you to give it a try. I mean,
Yeah. You're listening to Coastline. We're talking about holiday food, the inspirations, the challenges, hints from professional chefs Keith Rhodes and Simon Arnold. If you have a question for our chefs, give us a call at 910-343-1138. You can email us at coastline@whqr.org or tweet us using coastlinehqr. Gentlemen, have either of you ever gotten such a creative idea about a dish and then you've executed it, and it comes out the way you expected it to, but when you taste it, it's sort of uninspiring. Is there a difference between, say, art on a plate and a really yummy, satisfying dish?
Well, I'd say that more than anything, the most important thing about your food is that it has to taste good. That's like the number one thing. And if you want to get, if you have the technical ability or the know-how to get super creative with it, by all means, go for that. But you never really want to get into a situation where you're taking away from the product that you're using. I mean, we were talking before the show about, you know, getting great produce or whatever from farms and whatever. You don't want to, Alice Waters said, the best thing you can do to a great piece of a fantastic vegetable is to just let it do its thing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I've had creative ideas where I'm like, whoa, what if I do all this? And then the flavors are fine, but the texture is weird or the temperature is not right. So those are the big pitfalls.
And the center would have been better if you just let it be what it is.
Or whatever.
Like,
yeah.
Let it be the turnip.
Yeah.
Yes. Be the turnip.
Be the turnip.
You're listening to Coastline. It's our holiday trough. Professional chefs are sharing their ideas on holiday menus, what you need to know to successfully host that family dinner. If you have a question for Keith Rhodes of Catch or Simon Arnold of Seasoned and Seared, give us a call, 910-343-1138, or email us at coastline@whqr.org. We'll be back in about 90 seconds. You're listening to Coastline. Welcome back to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn, and with me in the studio once again, Chef Simon Arnold of Seasoned and Seared and Keith Rhodes of Catch. Welcome back. Mm-hmm. We're talking about food of the season. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 910-343-1138, or email us at coastline@whqr.org. So, gentlemen, we've talked about the go-to dishes, and Keith Rhodes, you talked about a baked salmon, and Simon, your go-to dish, what was that?
Well, I forget.
That was all the way back in segment one.
I think we did chestnuts.
It was chestnuts, you're right. Yeah. Now, let's talk about a cohesive holiday menu for a second, just sort of a sample menu, not necessarily what you may be serving this particular season. But Keith Rhodes, if you were going to help a home cook put together a holiday menu that would be a crowd pleaser for everyone, what would we have on that menu for an appetizer, a salad, a main dish, and a dessert?
Appetizer, I would just say shrimp cocktail. Mm. I think being off the coast and you could still get some local shrimp right now, that'd be a great choice. A salad, let's go with the root vegetable salad where we roast those vegetables. Simon mentioned earlier about white truffle oil. You know, you can make a little truffle vinaigrette to drizzle over those warm vegetables out of the oven. Great little salad. Maybe for an entree, it just kind of varies for me. I'm definitely the seafood kind of guy. But I would also say, you know, something that I encourage people to try, and it's kind of popular these days, get you a piece of lean pork belly. Mm-hmm. Roast that off in the oven, and you do it about 2 hours or whatever. We can provide you with the recipes. But I think that's something where you get that really crispy top on there and you slice it and it's very moist, not smoky like a piece of bacon, but definitely has that mouthfeel of bacon. And I guess for dessert, I mean, a really nice homemade sweet potato pie would just really take the cake. You know, whipped cream with flavors of eggnog spices in it would just be really dope, I think.
I'm there. Simon Arnold, what would a great sample chef for a home or sample menu for a home cook be?
So if we're going to do the appetizer salad thing, I would This is a good time of year for oysters. So I just bust out some half-shell oysters, put a little mignonette on there, which is like the classic, which is basically minced shallots and vinegar. So from there, a salad. There are a lot of great winter greens right now, like kales and stuff like that. So you can always do that. an entree. I'm trying to think of like what we used to do when I was a kid. I think roast, where the beef thing was always like my mom, our guilty pleasure, I think, is eating roast beef. And so we used to have a lot of roast beef. But I personally really love chicken. I do.
And you sound a little apologetic about that.
I'm sorry.
Why?
I'm
Why
sorry.
Are you apologetic about that?
I don't know. I think chicken can get a bad rap. You get the thing where it's like, oh, yeah, it tastes like chicken, you know? It's like that's like it's a ubiquitous flavor. Or, you know what I mean? That's
but
just what the comparative
thing. A good piece of chicken is hard to beat.
It's insanely good.
It is so gratifying and fulfilling. Yeah. So, you know, chicken is one of those kind of middle-of-the-road things. But I think when it's prepared perfectly, sous vide really lends itself to chicken really well. Because when you remove it from that bag – if you've left that skin on.
And then sear that skin
later
on.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Or another good technique is there's a guy, Heston Blumenthal, out in England. He's what he does is he takes his oven really, really low, basically pushes the thighs away, because when you truss your chicken or your bird, whatever it is, your thigh pressing against the body of the bird creates basically like a condensed area, and it takes longer for heat to get to that. So he presses it out, roasts it really slow, comes out of the oven, slow as in like 220 degrees for 3.5 hours, pulls it out, let it come to room temperature, bump up your oven to like 475, brush butter on there, throw it in, and then you can roast your skin super golden brown.
Wow. I smell it.
And
I smell
that's it. So yeah. We smell it in the studio. Yeah. But that goes against what we were all taught about how to cook a bird. You know, Alice Waters, I think, taught us to tie up the legs.
That's
so
the
that
traditional
the whole thing
French thing.
And I tell you what, there's a chef that works over, one of my friends, Chris, that works over there to the City Club. And I tell you what, a few years ago, and I had the opportunity to meet Thomas Keller not too long ago.
Whoa.
But Thomas Keller's oven roasted chicken, high heat, the first go around, finished on a low heat, perfect. Olive oil, salt, and pepper, just rub the bird down,
and
put
so
it in.
When you're talking about high heat for the chicken on the first go around, how long, at what
temperature?
Well,
I think it was more like 450 degrees for the first hour, and then they cut it down to 350 for the last 45 minutes or so. But what that does is that gives you that really brown, kind of crispy exterior, and it cooks it a certain way. And also cooking it with a little bit of water, a little pan of water in the
steam
oven.
Steam it, sort of. Yeah, help moist.
Kind of a combination kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we're merging into right now with culinary arts and chefs these days. A lot of the old, you can't go forward without knowing the old. French is the basis for all of what we do, no matter if Simon is a talented Spanish chef or I fancy myself a great Asian chef. Those are the basics that we have to know. So once we have those foundations, when we talk about sous vide and trussing and mirepoix and brumois cuts and all of these.
Okay, help me with those last two terms.
Yeah,
what do they mean?
Well, the brumois is a very, very small dice. The mirepoix is a vegetable mix that we use in cooking celery, onion, and carrot kind of deal. Creole culture, it's called the Trinity.
And, you know, peppers as opposed to celery.
Yeah. And so when you know those, you can definitely
bridge
out
and
do
the
other
rules.
Things.
You have to know the rules to break them. And the rules aren't – there's pretty much kind of what you're saying.
I think Julia Child's The Way to Cook, I think that was one of her cookbooks. Those are wonderful books to have this time of the year. And I speak of books because I came from an era of only books, and that's how we got our knowledge.
That's how you learned.
And so today, you know, these college graduates who are – trying to do something in the dorm, or these first people who have their first apartment. You know, you got the wonders of YouTube, and you have chefs like us who take that instruction and put it on there. So don't let technology be a scary thing, Grandma, when you're at the house and you want to bust out some cookies in 30 minutes or whatever. You know, jump right on there, punch it in, sugar cookies on YouTube, and see what comes up. I mean, you know, embrace the technology.
Yeah.
And speaking of sugar cookies, Simon Arnold, let's finish your
dessert.
Imaginary menu. Yes. What are we putting on the menu for dessert?
Oh, gosh. Is it a bad time of year to do ice cream?
Never.
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 Never a bad time to do ice cream. Well, I would assume that if I had chestnuts somewhere, I would probably make chestnut ice cream.
Chestnut ice cream. That's so interesting.
Sure. Yeah.
That's great. Now, I have to ask, as chefs, are there things that diners ever do, like dining room behavior, that just really gets under your skin? Like, Keith Rhodes, if you saw someone serve a dish.
I don't want to get in trouble right now on this. But go ahead. Let's see where we can go. I can navigate through this.
Okay. Sounds good. So a waiter comes out and serves a dish that you've just cooked, and then you see the diner reach over for salt. Now, would that upset you, or is that just a figment of the British comedic imagination?
Well, now that's a figment of imagination, because we season our food what we think is perfectly, because we don't have salt and pepper on the tables.
You don't. So someone would have to ask for it.
Someone would have to ask for it.
Would that upset you?
Not really. I mean, it's kind of like the person who wants their tuna cooked well done. When you come to my restaurant, and you ask for a piece of tuna well done, I cook that for you well done. I would prefer.
And the whole time you're thinking, I'm ruining this piece of tuna.
In my early stages as a chef, I did think that way. But, you know, one thing coming to age of a chef, I've understood is that particular person didn't just come to my restaurant that night and wanted it well done. That's how they prefer it all the time. So why intrude my personal opinions about that? You give them what they want and make them happy. And that's what we do as a chef, you know. And I mean, yeah, people come in and I have the $50 ribeye on there and they want it, cook it extra well. You know, I cringe, my teeth cringe, you know, and I'm like, oh, okay. And that's how they enjoy it,
right?
You know?
Simon Arnold, pet peeves for you. What have you seen someone do in a dining room where you've just gone, oh, please, no. This is a work of art. What are you doing?
Oh, boy. I'd say something that's happened to me before that I actually had to laugh. Like, I couldn't help but laugh. I had someone come in and ask if our French fries were gluten-free. And I kind of giggled a little bit.
Yeah.
Because there's no gluten in potatoes.
Right.
Anyway, so
right.
As far as, like, people seasoning, that doesn't bother me. You know, everybody, like he was saying, it's personal preference. You can't argue that.
And I think that in 2014, I've seen so many specialty diet requests. I had a diner come in, and I hope you aren't listening. She is allergic to everything red. When it came to food.
Red, like the color red.
Yes.
Not as in rare,
yes.
But
so
like no
red.
Radishes, no beets.
No red onions. You could have green onions, but not red onions.
That's
interesting. Yeah, super interesting. She had a little card and the whole nine yards. So being able to accommodate, you know. And of course, in our own homes, which we call our kitchens, we're firing on everything. So you come in with whatever, we're able to accommodate pretty much whatever.
Right.
You know, and it's super interesting these days, because people are finding out more. They're a little bit more conscious about their bodies. The doctors mm-hmm. are finding out new things about this and that and gluten tolerances and all of these different things. And so as a chef, we have to constantly evolve, be able to create great menus for the customers that come through and mm-hmm. want to experience what we offer.
Yeah.
So thinking about home cooks and they're putting together a menu, what's the biggest mistake that a home cook could make trying to put together a holiday menu for a big crowd?
Just keep it simple, you know, just keep it simple, stay within your comfort zone. If you're doing something that it's just going to put too much stress on you. Just and clean as you go. Prep anything that you can prep in advance, prep in advance. Cranberry sauce, you can do that 2 days before, mm-hmm. whatever. It'll keep fine in your refrigerator. Your soup, whatever. If you're doing that, you can do that the day before. You can even cook your bird if that's what you're doing. That's what I would do. I would cook it the day before and then heat it up.
Cooking it and taking shots at the bar. It's like, how many do I take and now I feel this way? You know, it's more like a fine brandy or a fine liquor. You do it slow, and that's how you become successful. If you rush it, if you don't put the love in it, that's exactly where you're going to get out of it. Yeah. So take your time.
Have fun. Have fun. Cooking's fun.
Have a few shots and just take your time and cook it with a lot of love.
Turn on some jazz.
And that's what it's all about. You know, you're not going to cook that prime rib in 45 minutes.
Yeah.
And Keith Rhodes, what does that mean, cook it with a lot of love? Has there ever been a time when you've been in the kitchen cooking and you've suddenly gone, wait a minute, I'm not cooking with love?
Well, yeah, and those were the times early on, again, when I'm feeling like I've got to run the show and I didn't have the proper plan and I'm in there and I'm just running with my head cut off. And, you know, it's like, okay, let me step out of this. Now, the next holiday, how am I going to make this a little bit better? How am I going to be a little bit more relaxed where I'm really enjoying the experience and not feeling overwhelmed with the experience? Keep it very simple. Don't try to go far out of your box. And know your customer, know your family, know what they like. You know, don't serve them Chinese when all they want is Italian.
Yeah.
You know?
But also
right.
Don't sweat over the details, too. And like you said, learn from your mistakes. I mean, that's...
If we're talking about elevating a traditional dish, so going back to our old friend, the green bean casserole that nobody would put on the table, or I don't know, even thinking about figgy pudding, what's a traditional Christmas dish, yams, that you can help people kind of bring to the next level, bring into this century?
Well, I mean, with sweet potatoes or yams or something like that, and it's so varied with what you can particularly do with that. But, something that I would enjoy that I think that we kind of bypass a lot, you know, we didn't talk about a soup today, and we're talking about the holiday season when it's normally a little chilly or something like that. You know, peel these sweet potatoes, dice them a half inch or so, cover them with water, cook them until they're fork tender. Now, at this point, we don't want to drain them. Keep that water in there. Add a tablespoon of yellow curry paste, a cup of heavy cream, get your blender out, blend all that stuff together, season with a little salt and pepper, and taste that. Now we've got a really nice sweet potato soup. You could call it a bisque if you like. And I think that that's very gratifying. Something that's very easy, it's very light. I mean, even your model sister that comes in would definitely have some of that, from time to time. Yeah, exactly. And it's a new spin on something that we're very familiar with instead of roasting the potatoes whole, you know, or making the sweet potato pudding or any of those kind of variants that we're very accustomed to. You know?
Simon Arnold, how would you elevate a traditional holiday dish? Would you ever make a fruit cake? Or is that a tradition that just needs to die
I don't think that. I mean, there are traditions for a reason, I guess. Would I make a fruitcake? No, because I don't really eat them.
I wouldn't. You just planted a seed, though, because, you know.
I would say probably
I would not just do that. But I tell you what, you've inspired me just with that request right there and me thinking about it. I'm going to take that to my daughter, which is my baker at the restaurant, and I'm going to tell her to make me a fruitcake.
There's an Italian version of a fruitcake that
I
can't
know the name of it.
Yeah,
right,
I can't think
there.
Of it, but it uses like really big chunks of really, really bitter chocolate. Mm. I can't remember the name of what that is, but that's
good.
Delicious.
That's good, because as a youngster, I remember looking at that thing on top of the refrigerator.
What the heck is that?
And I'm like, I don't know about that. But what is this green cherry in there or something like that? But I could definitely see that, especially for us. That poses a great, great challenge.
Okay, very quickly, Keith Rhodes, what's coming up at Catch?
Oh, the holiday season. We've got the Feast of Seven Fishes. We're doing that Christmas Eve, seven courses of seafood in Italian celebration.
And Simon Arnold, we'll catch you at Seasoned Gourmet?
Yeah, I'll do some classes at Seasoned Gourmet. Also, I post recipes and videos to my website, seasonedandseared.com. I have a chestnut soup recipe that I just did at the last pop-up that got really good reviews, so take a look at that.
Great. And we'll put links to your websites on ours. Thanks so much.
It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, it's been a good time.
So glad to have you both here. That's this edition of Coastline. Thanks, Keith Rhodes of Catch and Simon Arnold of Seasoned and Seared. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Coastline returns next year, January 7th. Representative Susie Hamilton and Ted Davis join us for a legislative look ahead. You're listening to Coastline here on HQR News 91.3 FM.